Hey everybody, it's Tuesday at 4 o'clock, so I know where I am in the KPFK studios. That gives me some regularity to my life. This is Eric Mann. I'm the host of Voices from the Frontlines, your national movement building show. So much going on, I have trouble holding my head around the show. But basically we have Jamala Rogers, a really renowned long-distance runner in both the Black Liberation and the overall revolutionary movement. So, Jamala, are you with us?
I surely am.
Okay. I'm very excited to have Jamala Rogers on with us. She's described here as spent her childhood growing up in a working-class neighborhood with her four siblings in Kansas City, Missouri. She came to political and cultural age during the tumultuous 60s and became active in the Black student movement. She's been organizing and raising hell ever since. I assume that is your definition. Jamala's a featured columnist for the award-winning St. Louis American newspaper, St. Louis's largest black weekly, and is on the editorial boards of BlackCommentator.com and The Black Scholar. Also, I know Jamala for many years. I hope my memory is right, that when I was working with the August 29th movement and I was in the United Auto Workers and you were with the Congress of African People, people like came out to St. Louis to meet both a terrific black auto worker named Doc, who was organizing in the auto factories, and I met with you and the terrific work you were, I believe, already with the Organization of Black Struggle. And I saw the amazing work you were doing there, and you're still doing it. So if you're the right person, I'm glad you're on the show.
Yeah, that's me. And thanks for having me, yes, definitely.
Well, let's start with this. Obviously, Ferguson, we've had constant tipping points. I think that the whole country, there is going to be, and there is great movement in the Black Liberation Movement right now, and from Trayvon to Ferguson, you know, they're just tipping point after tipping point. So but my first question is, you were there before, you're going to be there afterwards, you're right there now. What's it like? You know, I mean, that you have a small, important organization, and all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. Yeah. And you're trying to figure out how to provide political leadership, how to prevent others, if I could say, from coming in and sort of scooping the same, not the politics you would want. How you been doing?
I think we've done okay so far. It was a little hectic, like the first 2-3 weeks. And I think it's almost normal for people to want to come where the action is. But one of the things, even before this happened, Eric, I just said we need, our movement needs to stop the whole thing of running from place to place, whether it be Jenna, whether it be, you know, Florida or whatever. We need to begin to take root in our own community and make sure that whatever we're going to deal with, that we're dealing with it at home. And what I found is that's not always the case. So when I see certain people from St. Louis running here and there, they're not connected to any of the local movements. And so that's not to say that that's the case with all folks, but there's a tendency for us to be reactive rather than proactive. And so I think those first couple of weeks, our main task was really trying to make sure that the police officer was identified, that the as much justice as we could get for the family, we would get that, much protection, getting the witnesses, you know, together, that kind of thing, but also trying to build some infrastructure around what we knew was going to be a long-term struggle. So, you know, balancing all those balls and then having to deal with people who were coming in who, you know, obviously some had skills that we needed. We just couldn't at that point, you know, pull them in a way that was going to be effective. And so some people kind of found their way, found ways to contribute independent of us. So that was good. But it was just impossible for a couple of weeks. And, of course, we were all sleep deprived.
So right.
That didn't help either. But I think we've gotten to a point now where, you know, we're able to build the infrastructure, get our demands out, and quite frankly, have been quite successful keeping the pressure on folks in Ferguson, the Department of Justice, and have already got three of the demands met. So that's good.
Well, as you know, we sent four people from the Labor Community Strategy Center and who are doing work in the Black and Latino communities, Manuel Criollo, Ashley Franco, and Ron Collins, and Julian Lamb, and we brought the Voices on the Frontlines crew and did some wonderful interviews with some OBS people that we already had on the show. So let's focus a lot on demand development. What have you been asking for? What has been met? What's the front line of what you want?
So there's actually an umbrella coalition called Hands Up United, which includes some national folks as well as local people. And then there's the Don't Shoot Coalition, which is a table of a broad table of activists from various communities, labor, faith, community, business, and students. And so it's pretty broad as well as the political spectrum. And so the demands are a little bit different, but there's some of them overlap. So obviously, you know, everybody's demand is getting a independent prosecutor because the current prosecutor, Bob McCullough, has a history of contempt for black people, and so nobody feels comfortable with his partial and independent view around the situation. But he is not budging, and at a certain point when the governor had declared a state of emergency, the governor then could have appointed a special prosecutor and chose not to. So there's a lot of game playing. So that was one, that there be an impartial investigation and that be done by somebody other than the current prosecuting attorney. And then, of course, the immediate arrest of Darrell Wilson and an indictment. And so that was a little slow at first, but as, you know, the pressure increased and intensified and was unrelenting, the prosecutor did pull together a grand jury. And so allegedly we will have a indictment or lack thereof come sometime 1st of October. So that was one. We also asked for there to be a investigation by the Department of Justice, and there have been some conversations already with Eric Holder in his office, and the Organization for Black Struggle partnered with Color of Change and a number of other groups who collected signatures asking for that and took those to the White House a couple of weeks ago. So it was nearly a million signatures. So that was some more pressure. Well, they did more than that. They were already on the ground doing the investigation of the Mike Brown murder. Now what they are going to be doing is probing into the Ferguson Police Department, looking at its policies, procedures, and practices. So that was a victory that we thought was one that was very, very important, because here's a community that not only has to deal with the racial profiling and the harassment, the assaults and obviously killing of black people, but they couple it with, I can only call it extortion, extorting fines from these poor and working class people, so that this represents the third largest stream for their municipality. So when you go to the Ferguson courts, you see all black people. There's bench warrants. One reporter said like three per household, I mean, over a course of a year. So really, they are just super exploiting the black folks, and that's the racial profiling piece. So it's not just that, but every time they get stopped, there's going to be some money involved with trying to get out of that particular violation. So those kind of practices began to come to the surface, and made national news. So it really did prompt the Department of Justice to come in. The other piece.
And let me hold you just on that for a second, Jamala. I mean, obviously the Obama administration is a very complicated thing to figure out. There's been a lot of disappointments with them. But one of the things, you know, for instance, we asked for them to investigate and do the same thing with the Sanford Police Department, which they did not do. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I know that there's been at least 15 consent decrees developed between the Justice Department and police departments where they came in and threatened them. So this is a good thing. So tell us a little bit more about what's the dynamics like. We have not had a good experience with the Obama administration in L.A., but tell us what it's been like trying to work with Eric Holder. My instinct is he's been saying this is a high priority to him. Tell us what it's been like.
was on a conference call with him maybe about a month ago now, and basically he told folks on the call that, you know, this was in fact a high priority for the Department of Justice, and they were putting their best people on the ground. These folks had a history with police brutality cases, police murder cases, and so they were well versed to come into this situation. So, you know, there are a number of people who have the same hesitancy that you have, because very little has come out of a number of these probes. In fact, they just almost sort of disappear. I mean, you don't even hear that there's a conclusion one way or the other. They
wow.
just bounce to someplace else. But we also know that there's been places like, you know, in New Jersey where there was a consent decree and, you know, the state took over. So the situation in Ferguson is a chronic one, but it's also one that exists across North County. And so we really don't want them just to zero in on Ferguson, but to look at that whole North County corridor that really exploits and targets black people. So we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, there's a number of people that are saying, how are we going to trust them when, you know, they're part of the whole system? But, you know, when you're looking to appeal to a higher authority, that's the highest authority in the land in terms of law enforcement. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, just to stay on that a minute, I don't agree with you. Of course they're part of the system, but we all live in this capitalist system, so there is a difference between this Obama Justice Department and, God knows, a Romney Justice Department. So I think the question of how to keep the pressure on Holder is at least somebody you can pressure. So, you know, I was at the 50th anniversary of SNCC, and he did get up and talk to us and said, I want you to know that I wouldn't be here without you, and I have promised that I will really work to enforce civil rights. So, of course, that's easier said than done. So I just want to stay one more round on the Obama administration. So you had the meeting with him a month ago. How do you continue? Like, have you dealt with the Domestic Policy Council? Have you dealt with his office? What's the follow-up like as an organizer?
Well, I'm not the one that was the only time that I actually met with him. There has been subsequent meetings, and it seems like there's different components of that office that people are meeting with. And to me, it seems to be a bit disjointed, because even there was a call, a meeting with somebody from the White House, but it wasn't the same people that we have been talking to. So they're not coordinating their efforts, too. And then sometimes, quite frankly, Eric, there are people on the call that have no connection with Ferguson, you know, so
right, right.
It's kind of confusing as to how they get on the call. But the people that are doing the work, you know, we're going to continue to keep the pressure up, and then when there's designees that they ask for to talk, and certainly we're going to be providing them with as much information as we can that they would not could not get from local law enforcement, or, you know, we want to make sure that they have access to that, too, in terms of, you know, people who've had negative experiences with that police department.
The voice you're listening to is Jamal Rogers, a longtime leader in the Black Revolutionary Movement, the Black Liberation Movement, and the overall U.S. and international left, who's a real example of a long-distance runner who's still running. What's it like in terms of now OBS, Organization of Black Struggle, trying to figure out, again, its unique niche as, like, at this moment, what are you doing?
Well, the interesting thing about it is the Organization for Black Struggle in the late 70s was organized in North County, because this was when integration was happening around in that corridor, and black people who had the means were moving to North County, and these were in predominantly white communities, and so they met with quite a bit of resistance. And so even as late as late 70s, there were crosses burned on people's lawns. There were bricks thrown through front glass windows wrapped in with signs that said KKK. So, and the interesting thing about those attacks is that they got the residents, the black residents, got no response from the white police department. So fast forward that to 2014, and you see the outgrowth of those relationships just souring and fermenting over the last 40 years. So we know what the history is. We know what had happened and why people have the relationships they do. But in Ferguson, basically in the last 10 years, the demographics flipped. That's how quick it changed. So 10 years ago, it was 70% white and 30% black, and now it's the reverse. So with still all municipal entities being run by white people. So that has not changed, and so that's a dynamic that people, we really want to help empower the folks who live and reside in Ferguson and around the municipalities around Ferguson, because that's not acceptable in 2014, where you got a minority really dictating to a majority. But we have been, the experiences that we had around local control, I mean, we were part of the coalition in St. Louis that just a year and a half ago brought local control to the St. Louis community after 150 years of state control. And so that whole struggle has been one that really, I think, prepared us for what's happening now. And in about a week or two, we will be presenting the local board of aldermen in terms of St. Louis a proposed legislation around a civilian oversight board. And we're probably one of the last cities to have one. And so we've had the benefit of learning the lessons from all over the country, what works, what didn't, why they fail, why they're ineffective. And so we think we have a pretty good one. Well, guess what? Now Ferguson says they're open to a civilian review board, and so we got something for them. We got a template ready for them, and so that's how we've been able to sort of, you know, fill that niche that we've been working in that area around repression and police terror for a long time.
Well, I want to continue. We had an excellent interview last week, and I feel very badly that I had not written down the woman's name, because it was an interview between Ashley Franklin from our organization, who went to Ferguson, of course, and met with someone from the organization of Black Struggle at her home, and they had a terrific interview that we ran on the show. And the particular thing I want to talk to you about is that there are some young people in Los Angeles, for instance, right now, who have been critical of the Strategy Center by saying that we get too much involved in what they call policy. And the criticism is essentially that we spend too much time with the school board, too much time with the police, too much time with the MTA, too much time with the city council, and they think we should be protesting more. And, of course, we do tons of protesting, but I'll say my opinion, that we think that's not called policy. It's called negotiating with people in power. And so the person from your group, I have to say, in this line struggle, said, you know, the yelling and screaming is always great, but after a while, who has a long-term strategic plan to actually engage people in power? And I thought, great, that's obviously, we share a common perspective. So my question is, you know, it's a statement and a question, is how do you explain to people that learning about a template of an actual civilian review board, learning the specificity of what you're asking for, going into negotiations with these folks, is such a critical cutting edge of if we're ever going to win anything?
Well, you know, and you're right, and there's young people even now saying, you know, we don't want to be sitting down talking with the popo and all of that. And, you know, there is a role for everybody in the struggle, as you well know, and so some people are more suited for this. I mean, one of the reasons why I never ran for elected office is because I don't have the temperament for it. So, you know,
right.
So I know when they say stuff like that, I say, yeah, I understand, yeah. But part of a struggle is building power. And how do you do that? There's different ways to do that. And so sometimes it's by legislative. Sometimes you can do it through voting someone in, because it's just amazing that it whatever sort of reform that you really want, it either has to become a policy piece or a legislative piece. So then when you start to look at that, and that's one thing we've really been trying to organize young people around, so if you want something, there's going to be somebody in some position that can help or hurt you from getting that. So that's just a key part of helping people understand how you build power, and it's different ways to do that, and some people are more suited for some things than others. And so but we want them to understand that it's all a part of the struggle. You can't say, let's just keep marching, but marching to what end? Even a march has to be part of a broader strategy.
Yeah, and to elaborate that, because I didn't want to create my own position wrong, I guess what I'm trying to say is that we do everything, right? We sit in, we march, we occupy things, we get arrested. But I think the question I will say, and I just want to elaborate, you know, when I was with Congress of Racial Equality, you know, they'd always ask two questions, right? Who's your leader? which meant who do we want to assassinate? So we never told them. But then the second question is, what is it that you people want? You know, that old story.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
we would say, all right. And we realized, yeah, when the public is asking us, so what do you want? We had to come up with very specific demands. And then the mm-hmm. question is, well, who has the power to give you that demand?
Mm-hmm.
So if the power is with the civil rights, you know, if we want a civil rights act, then we march on Washington. And whether Malcolm called it the farce on Washington or even rightfully, at some point, if you want a civil rights bill, you got to do something to get a civil rights bill. If you want a community control of police, there is somebody on the other side. And I don't think that means that we have to start becoming inside players. We don't want to get corrupted into that. But we are trying to figure this out. That's what it's a lifetime struggle. But I am saying that for some of the young people, I am saying that, guess what? After a while, those people that we don't like at all are still the people we got to negotiate with, which is different from saying they're our friends.
Right, right.
Do you think?
And again, the struggle is both local, national, international. We have somebody now working on a piece that's going to be going to the United Nations. And so somebody might say, well, what's the point of that? What's that got to do with anything? But, you know, Malcolm told us that we needed to be going to the international arena. I mean, this country needs to be held accountable for it's the way that it's treated its citizens. And so we're looking at all different tactics as part of the overall strategy.
And I have about 4 more minutes. I'd like you to elaborate that, because one thing, Jamal, I've been trying to figure out is, given the poll taxes, the arrests, the police brutality, the super exploitation, the mass criminalization, how do we bring this back into the international arena? Because I think that has been a weakness that I think we all need to address better. How are you thinking about that?
Well, one thing is, this has to start being a national movement. So, and that's one of the things that we were telling people. If we say this is a national epidemic, and it is, you know, the shooting of black and brown people in the streets of America, that's national. I mean, within 1 month, 4 people that were unarmed were killed by police. And so we need to act like it's a national epidemic and start coordinating our efforts to start drilling down where we are, and then be able to take those experiences and that data to, for as far as I'm concerned, the United Nations and the World Court. Because, again, when countries violate human rights, there's supposed to be some retribution, some process. And so you just can't keep doing this and nothing happens. But we got to get better organized, and so that people see that it's national and that we're very serious about this thing, as opposed to every time something happens, we either post it on Facebook or we run somewhere and have a march and then it dies down. That's not how you get systemic change. And so I think we have to connect our cities up first and begin to look at how we can have accountability to the police where we are, and then how do we then connect that to a broader, a global struggle around state terror and state violence. So, you know, it's not a mystical step to make. It's real and it's concrete. So, you know, that's part of the education you have to do, particularly in this phase when you see that the kind of militarized police that folks witnessed in Ferguson that they had never seen before. So it's more of that waiting for you. You know, that's all I can say. It's more of that waiting for you unless we start to link arms around this country.
Jamal Rogers, that's a great end, and it's of course, the next step is there'll be another beginning. We'll stay in touch with you. I really want to tell you the tremendous respect that I have for your own life and the work you've done, Organization of Black Struggle, and it's really great to be in the struggle with you.
Thank you, and I know we'll talk again soon.
Take good care of yourself.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Okay.
Here comes the sun, little darling.